You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today I bought a sweater. Wait for that. Last winter, I was scrolling through my Facebook feed when a sponsored post caught my eye.
It is with mixed emotions that we share this news with you.
After many years of passion and dedication to Waverly, Toronto, we've made the difficult decision to close our doors.
As a small business, we've faced increasing challenges in a world where larger corporations continue to push entrepreneurs like us to the margins. Unfortunately, it has become financially unsustainable, and our boutique can no longer keep pace.
Looking at the photo of the Waverly Toronto storefront, I was hit with a mix of emotions. How many times had I passed that window? While walking down Bloor Street's fancy Mink Mile and gazing longingly inside at all of the fine men's sports coats and knit sweaters that they displayed there so regally. I felt sad that the place was closing before I ever felt flush enough to just stroll in and buy something beautiful for myself. But when I saw the words clearance sale at the bottom of the sponsored post, I felt something else. Opportunity. I clicked through to waverly-toronto.com, a website that I had never dared to visit before. I don't know, maybe for fear of sticker shock. And that was where I learned exactly why Waverly Toronto was closing its doors forever.
Since 1985, Waverly Toronto, founded by Walter and Beverly, has been a trusted name in timeless style and quality. Now, as we focus on family, we're saying goodbye.
To thank you, enjoy up to 80% off in our closing sale. Don't miss your last chance to shop incredible pieces at unbeatable prices. Shop now before it's all gone.
I wasn't sure that I fully believed them. I mean, was this really just about spending more time with family, or were they actually closing the shop for the reasons hinted at in their Facebook post? Big corporations pushing small shopkeepers out of the market. I know that the closure of a luxury clothing store is not like the saddest thing in the world, but like they said, Waverly Toronto was a labor of love. A family business, like an institution in the community, one that had been serving Toronto for 40 years. Their Facebook page, which had like thousands of likes on it, it was filled with posts from sad but grateful customers, wishing Walter and Beverly the very best, but bemoaning the fact that yet another local business had to close. Seems like it was sad for everybody to see Waverly Toronto go. But a little happy for me to have a chance to finally pick something out for myself. And maybe taking advantage of this final sale was not greedy or opportunistic of me, but generous of me. I mean, Walter and Beverly had inventory that they needed to clear out. They had a retirement future to pay for. Why not help them? I clicked through some products and stopped when I saw a handsome sweater from the brand Leo. It was listed as Men's Elegant Cardigan, and it was just $69.95, marked down from $280. I had never worn Leo before, and after entering my credit card details and hitting that purchase button, I was hit with a mild rush of consumer dopamine. A couple of weeks later, my garment arrived.
Your poor zipper, bro.
If you want to destroy my sweater, hold this thread as I walk away. Well, today I'm going to pull that thread myself. Wait for it. How do I look?
Man, it's painted on. It looks like the spandex things that, like, cyclists wear. The sleeves go just below your elbows. The pockets look fake, and it looks like they're actually doing a lot of work and sort of loosening up the way it fits.
I feel like I'm wearing Spanx.
Yeah, it's too tight, bro.
At first, I thought that they must have just sent me the wrong size, so I went to check the tag. But it was not where I thought it would be. It was on the outside of the sweater, stitched into my shoulder. Anyone checking out the big guy bursting out of his sausage casing sweater could easily see the size tag. It read XL, which usually fits me just fine. I did find another tag inside, mostly Chinese text, but there was some English. 100% polyester. I figured that the quickest way to deal with this would be to simply walk up to Bloor Street to Waverly Toronto's brick-and-mortar storefront, get an exchange or a refund. So I checked Google Maps for the exact address. And please, like, don't gloat if you know where this is going. You're better than that. You're better than my colleagues here, who made fun of me because they figured it out before I did. Because it came as a surprise to me, anyhow, to discover that Waverly Toronto does not have a storefront on Bloor Street's Mink Mile. And guess what? They do not have a storefront anywhere. There is no record of any physical Waverly Toronto existing in Toronto or anywhere. I started to feverishly check everything. How long had they had that Facebook page? When was the website registered? If this was a 40-year-old business, how come those things only happened in the last 2 years? I couldn't find any evidence of them in the Yellow Pages. There was no business registry for Waverly Toronto. Nobody I knew had ever shopped there. There was nothing I could find that indicated to me that a clothing store called Waverly Toronto had ever actually existed. I couldn't find anything, but I did find this.
We are quite confident that this image, or a significant part of it, was created by AI.
That's what I read on a website called Was It AI? It was. They analyzed the pictures that I sent and informed me that Beverly and Walter are not real human beings. I was beginning to suspect that I had been scammed. And as it turns out, other Torontonians felt that way too. These are reviews of Waverly Toronto from the consumer website Trustpilot.
The products that I ordered are pretty much garbage. Two pieces that I ordered didn't come close to fitting. Do not order from these scam artists.
This whole website is deceitful. This company is not in Toronto, but China. When I needed to return an item was when I discovered the deceit. I should have known better. Beware.
Facebook scam. I looked closely at the picture on the main screen, and the company name on the storefront looks photoshopped. My bad. One star.
One star.
One star.
Unlike Walter and Beverly, the people who wrote them do seem to actually exist. My first impulse was to leave my own scathing review. But then I remembered that I am a journalist, and maybe I could do a bit better. I set out on an investigative mission to uncover the true identity of the scammers who duped me. I checked the fine print of Waverly Toronto's terms of service. I checked the source information provided by the shipping service that they used. I checked the Who Is information on their domain registry. I ran reverse image searches on their products. And I scoured the internet for any mention anywhere of the clothing store Waverly Toronto. And I did find something. Something strange. A different online clothing store. Omelia and Oliver of London. At the beginning of their terms and conditions legalese page, I found the sentence, "This website is operated by Waverly Toronto." I went back to check on that a day later, only to discover that the website had changed from Omelia and Oliver of London, UK, to Omelia and Oliver, Toronto. Both sites and their layout and messaging struck me as almost identical to Waverly, Toronto. So then I went back to check Waverly, Toronto's website to see if the source codes matched. Waverly, Toronto had disappeared. Was that just a coincidence that Waverly, Toronto disappeared right when I started to hunt them down? That they closed up shop right when I discovered that maybe this wasn't just one dodgy website, but that there was some connection between Waverly, Toronto and Omelia and Oliver? I mean, what if this was an entire fraud ring? I was determined to uncover all of it, no matter how hard I had to look for more sites in this ring. Turns out I did not have to look very hard at all, because while I was out searching for breadcrumbs, loaves of bread started to fall from the sky and smack me on the head. I did not hunt for and discover, for example, Aveline Couture. Aveline Couture found me. They served me an ad for women's handbags.
In 2004, Aveline Couture began with a dream and two women crafting elegant handbags by hand in the heart of Yorkville, Toronto's premier fashion district. Guided by an...
I started getting these ads every day, store after store, going out of business in Toronto, in Montreal, in Vancouver, men's clothes, women's clothes, handbag stores, stores selling things that I am obviously not the target demographic for. Why? Why was I getting these? Here's my best guess. Behavior tracking and data sharing. When I went deliberately onto the sites of these stores, when I was investigating these dodgy clothing stores, the algorithm looked at my behavior and figured this guy must like these kind of stores. And the fact that I'd actually made a purchase on one of them, well, that must have put me at the top of the suckers list. And either separate dodgy companies were sharing that sucker's list, or maybe it was just one company, one entity somewhere, endlessly generating fake-ass stores.
After two decades of passion and dedication, we've reached a bittersweet decision. Adelaide Toronto will be closing...
28 years ago... Two best friends took a leap into the unknown. With all our savings and full of dreams, we opened
Rotivia. A boutique founded by Sophie, Trunova Canada features timeless and comfortable
pieces. It's time for us to begin a new chapter as grandmothers.
Competing against the corporate giants has become an uphill battle. And while we fought with everything we had, the time has come to
Trunova Canada is more than just a brand. It's a community.
With love and gratitude, Emma and Claire.
This isn't the end. It's just the beginning of something new. With lots of love, always, your Nicole and Jessica.
My feed was totally taken over with stylish independent Canadian boutiques going out of business after serving their local communities for decades. Stores like Manesco, Avalay, Jacob & Nayla, Montreal Mode, Manitoba Mode, Walker & Moreau. Each store told a similar story. Each of them had a detailed narrative with fictional characters who had hopes and dreams, dreams for me to be stylish. And each of these sites was customized to different cities in Canada. Sometimes they were customized to specific neighborhoods or communities in Canada. These sites are really manipulative. They prey upon people's concern for their neighborhoods and communities. They try to get you to connect with actual human beings who are being forced to close their businesses. They're appealing to your sense of community. They're showing you images of your own surroundings and asking you to care about what happens to the businesses that have invested in your community. And all of it is a lie. It's all fake. I mean, how could it even be legal to manipulate people's emotions this way? I decided it was time to ask a lawyer.
Are those sleeves the same length, or are they different lengths? It's a little tight in the chest, as they say.
That's Neil Hartung.
My name is Neil Hartung. I am a lawyer in the province of Ontario.
Neil practices consumer protection law, and he also does volunteer legal work in consumer advocacy.
I'm with the Consumers Council of Canada, and they're a not-for-profit that advocates for consumers in the consumer protection space.
Neil, is it legal for stores to just lie to people?
So the Consumer Protection Act has a Part 3 in it, which is about not lying to people in the marketplace, right? And basically it says there's a general sort of you can't lie to people, in diplomatic terms, misrepresentations. And then there's a long list of sort of examples of what constitutes lying. And one of those examples is that the goods are available for a reason that doesn't exist. If they're saying that, you know, they're going out of business when they're not, right, that may well be considered a misrepresentation. If you've suffered a misrepresentation, you can rescind the agreement and you can sue on the agreement. The candle is worth more than the cost. I mean, court fees and getting some paper together, you know, that's probably $150. So it's not really a viable option. It's, you know, it's really just a bit of a fool's errand, right? And so the...
Maybe it is a fool's errand. And maybe that's just the kind of errand I like. So if I get emotionally invested in those stories... There is no recourse for, like, emotional damages or anything. Like, we're just talking about the cost associated. Like, there's no kind of, like, ancillary mechanisms for, like, I believed in what you were telling me and it was all a lie.
The pain and suffering, the woe is me.
Yeah.
Canadian courts are very, very stingy about those kinds of damages. Generally, Canadian courts would require that you were so upset by finding out that this was a lie that somehow... You know, that impacted you and you had to spend money to, you know, go to therapy or, you know, you couldn't go to work because you were so despondent about this. That also starts to look a bit like gilding the damages lily. It doesn't really matter all that much in the eyes of the law. And you know, you can think about how businesses name themselves, right? First choice haircutters. Well, everyone loves marine land, really? Everyone loves whales in captivity? So businesses have a lot of license in the eyes of the law to make up stories, to make up backgrounds. Unless it's kind of relevant to the transaction, it's just sort of part of the noise. It's not the legal signal, right? Contract law, right, which is what we're talking about here, does have a concept in it of a tout. Right. Of being, you know, of telling a story, whether that story is real or not, it doesn't really matter all that much in the eyes of the law.
Could Neil be right? Was the story of Walter and Beverly just like harmless ad speak, the kind that you hear everywhere? You know, like product of Canada when it's not really made in Canada. Or those Axe body spray commercials. Like, nobody actually believes that groups of women will physically throw themselves on you if you smell like Axe. It's just a playful fantasy that both the seller and the buyer enjoy participating in.
I think that someone has come up with a sales script, right? That, you know, we've been around forever, coming up on 30 years. The world has changed and we have to get out. And we need to sort of get rid of our inventory and we're passing those savings on to you, right? That's classic marketplace behavior, right? It is a negotiation. That is the marketplace.
Maybe I hadn't been conned after all. Or if I had been, maybe I had just conned myself. After all, Waverly Toronto never literally claimed that they had a storefront on Bloor Street's Mink Mile. My brain filled in that blank based on their photos. And though my elegant men's cardigan turned out to be 100% polyester, does not feel very elegant at all, Waverly actually never promised me that it was made of anything else. It did not say on the product listing that it was 100% cashmere or anything nice like that. I guess I could still argue that I was lied to about the sizing of my sweater. I was promised an extra large and got a medium, at best. But I don't know, like maybe what I received was a Chinese extra large. and Waverly never claimed that their clothes were not manufactured in China. Maybe all of this was just business as usual, and I was just a guy who bought the wrong sweater. I felt deflated and ready to close the book on this investigation. Take the L, bin the sweater, probably never tell you about any of this. But then something strange happened. All of those Facebook ads for dodgy stores stopped. And instead, I started to get served other Facebook ads and YouTube videos encouraging me to create my own dodgy store.
Tired of the 9-to-5 grind? Let AI work for you.
This kid made $500,000 in high school. Here's how you can copy him. I've been using the same method for the past couple months, and I've already made over $50,000.
We're diving into five passive income stream ideas for 2025 that you can't afford to miss.
Five fastest ways to make passive income at any age.
Here are the four best passive income ideas to make $10,000 a month, and the last one's my favorite.
I can't be sure how this happened. My best guess is that once it became clear to the algorithms that I was a one-time mark, the algorithms changed their mind about why I kept on clicking onto these shady e-commerce sites. Maybe I no longer fit the customer profile. My behavior may have mirrored the behavior of somebody looking to get into the business, or perhaps somebody who could be convinced to get into the business. And what business is that? The dropshipping business. I'd heard the term before, but I'd never really bothered to find out much about what it meant.
I made $25,000 last month selling a cheap product like this, and you can do the same.
Here's a side hustle for the broke teenagers. You make $500 per day passively with just a phone and a laptop.
I'm not joking when I say this is the lowest risk, highest reward method to start a $10,000 a week dropshipping store.
If you're going to listen to any dropshipping advice, let it be this.
Here's a full tutorial on how I make $1,000 a week in less than 60 seconds.
Holy, I just made $800 in revenue on day one of running ads.
Here's a super simple side hustle that literally anyone could do. I'm not even kidding. Even your 75-year-old grandma could do this, or your 10-year-old brother.
As I soon learned, dropshipping is when you sell things you don't actually have in your store that doesn't actually exist. Waverly, Toronto, Aveline Couture, all of them, dropshipping sites. So here's how it works. When you click the buy button on a dropshipper's website, the product is actually ordered from the source supplier. The dropshipper holds no inventory. The dropshipper keeps nothing in stock. The dropshipper doesn't do any shipping. To be a dropshipper, all you need to do is pluck a handful of product listings from somebody else, from a supplier's massive catalog, and feature them on your own store, your own virtual store, at a substantial, perhaps exponential markup.
Let's say I'm in the pets niche. Let's say I want to import this dog bed, right? And I found this one. I really like it. I'm going to go ahead and sell it in my store. So all I need to do to import this product to my store is simply just go ahead and take the link, cut it. And over here, I'm going to go ahead and click on add products. You're going to see that the supplier changes over to whatever the supplier was that you're going with. In this case, AliExpress. And it's shipping from China. We even have the option to generate a product page using AI. Increase the profit to 80%, then $37.46 for the total profit, selling at $102.33.
All of this raises the question, why? Why would anyone buy that dog bed for an 80% markup from a dropshipper when you could buy it for the same price that the dropshipper paid from the source site? And sometimes these are sites like Alibaba or Amazon, sites that we all shop on. Lucky for me, I was now getting ads and videos every day from guys like the ones you just heard, claiming that they had answers to those questions. It seemed like every dropshipping store that was trying to sell me somebody else's products was now replaced with a dropshipping guru trying to sell me tips and tricks for leveling up my own dropshipping game.
I've made millions of dollars with dropshipping.
I've been able to make hundreds of thousands of dollars with AI.
$500 a day exactly working from home.
Hundreds of dollars a day from this side hustle.
$600,000 this month alone.
Now, why these guys are spending a lot of money on ads just to give away their million-dollar dropshipping tips instead of just using those tips themselves and quietly making millions, That might be a question to answer on another day. But for now, I will just distill for you what those gurus taught me in those ads that I was served. What they taught me is how you can take a cheap product on a big e-commerce platform, a site like Alibaba's AliExpress or Shein.com or the Latvian e-commerce platform Joom, or even something I find on Amazon. How can I, or any dropshipper, take that product and convince them to buy it for 300 to 400% more than they need to pay if they just bought it from one of those original sites? The answer to that question, the gurus told me, is marketing. Marketing is what dropshippers add to the value chain. They don't add value by getting things closer to you or putting them in a nearby store where you can go have a look and try before you buy. They do not add value through salesmanship, through providing a great in-store experience, bringing you things to your fitting room that might look great on you, you know, just brightening your day with a friendly, maybe even a flirty interaction. No, dropshippers add value by marketing. By telling you a story about themselves, the friendly neighborhood boutique shutting its doors forever, but also a story about the product. Take, for example, my sweater. If I had first come across that sweater on the first website where you could buy it, a website like AliExpress, well, I would have seen a thumbnail for a cheaply made sweater for $14, and I would not have been interested. But on Waverly Toronto's website, it looked like a luxury item. Not just because the price was higher, not just because it was retitled the Leo Elegant Men's Cardigan, but because my sweater and all of the products on these sites look a lot better on the dropshippers' websites. So how do you take a crappy thumbnail for a crappy product and make it look like a piece of designer luxury wear? Turns out there's an app for that. There are actually many apps for that. And that is exactly what these guys were trying to sell me through Facebook and YouTube. Pay-for-use AI dropshipper marketing apps. There are a bunch of them out there, and the technology is insane. You take your tiny, low-res thumbnail of any product, you upload that crappy photograph to one of these AI marketing tool websites, and it will spit out high-res video after high-res video with gorgeous AI models wearing the product.
This is the cheapest way to actually grow your business. Look up other videos or ads that are using the same product and create a similar video. Now, not just one though. Make 10, 20, 30, or even more. Just become a content factory.
I'm serious. I could take a crappy iPhone photograph of your coffee mug and put it in like a Gucci level ad for that coffee mug. You can even generate AI testimonials. Fake customers telling the world that they bought your product and they love it.
Have you heard of this new AI tool? This AI tool allows you to get anybody to hold your product for you. You can select from the hundreds of people that they give you, upload your product image, and there you have it, somebody holding your product. Comment the word AI if you want this tool.
These tools can produce slick-looking ads, as I mentioned, with AI models flouting the product, but they can also churn out convincing testimonials from supposedly regular people who bought your products and love them. It's the next generation of fake written product reviews, which have been plaguing e-commerce for years now. Once again, here is consumer rights lawyer Neil Hartung.
But those reviews are a whole other aspect of the scam, right? You can buy Google reviews, you can buy Facebook reviews. They're called review brokers, right? And it's all part of the tout. What we're talking about is the ability of AI to just create a quantum leap in that kind of marketing, right? And I don't want to say it's fraudulent marketing, but there's definitely a gap. And that used to be a concern, right? Like, I still, if I'm buying something that I care about, I want to see the thing. I don't want to buy it just based on a picture, right? Otherwise, you end up with something that doesn't quite fit right or whatever. But more and more people aren't going that route, right? They're relying on, the Google reviews and the five stars, and it was excellent, and you know, some throw some testimonials in there, and maybe you'll get what you bargained for, and maybe you won't, right? The AI tools that we're looking at just enforce that. It's how quickly you can create a relatively decent looking ad for almost zero effort and zero money.
But I think it may actually have gone beyond that. All right, let's recap our story so far. I bought a sweater from a robot who hurt my feelings. The robot knew what kind of things I was all greedy and sweaty for, and it knew that I would pay like four times as much for something if I thought I was buying it from a waspy silver fox couple in a fancy store down the street. I went looking for that robot and for its master. And instead I found a robot army. Or more accurately, I didn't find anything.